Hello, everyone, and good evening, good afternoon, good morning, whenever you're listening to this. It's currently 1:30 my time, 12:30 Harris's time. We are the Young Lads. I'm Peter DeFee Jr. alongside Harris Eisenberg in what I would assume would be the broadcast booth of the Peoria Chiefs home stadium. Is that where you're at?
Yes, actually, the room next door, which is where I sit before I go on the air. So yeah, it is, just chilling, a couple press releases to write. But yeah, all is well. Peoria Chiefs are hot. Other teams in the MLB are hot. So, all is well in, Illinois. It's way too hot here. Living in St. Pete last year and then coming up here, it's very similar. Not a fan, but, we're getting through, so it's okay.
Yeah, but as I always say, it's not the heat that gets you down here, it's the humidity.
Yes.
Which is
also a
bunch of bull, but, you know.
Yeah, I'm still trying to invest in one of those tinfoil things to protect the car from burning. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, I have that. It's much needed, especially down here. Like, I never go out and not put it in my car, even if it's like 5 o'clock, or now I guess it gets dark at 8 o'clock. So even if I go out at like 7 o'clock and it's going to get dark in an hour, I still put it up.
I mean, whoever thought about making one of those, just really a solid entrepreneur. Maybe we'll have him on the podcast.
Hey, who knows? I watched a movie in college. This is just a little tangent. I watched a movie in college about the guy that created the windshield wiper. The intermediate level of the windshield wiper. I don't know what made me think about that, but you said the entrepreneur of the tinfoil sunshield. So,
I mean, think about it. The world wouldn't be what it is today without the windshield wiper. I mean, think about all the dangers in driving. People like to complain about speeding and unfortunately people are idiots and drive a little intoxicated. But how about if we drove without a windshield wiper? I mean, that would be a problem.
Yeah, and I mean, from one great invention to the windshield wiper to the other, which is baseball. That's what we're here to talk about on the Young Lads podcast. Not a whole lot of college baseball to talk about. It's been a little dormant as far as transfer portal news. I forget the name of him, but Texas Tech just lost one of their pitchers who had a really solid year this year in the transfer portal. Of course, now that we're talking about it, I completely forgot his name. But we'll talk more about that as we get some more transfer news in. But one of the big stories I guess we have to talk about is Mike Trout, because now he is done. He thinks at least for 2 weeks, and depending on if he needs surgery or not, he can come back sooner. I, on the other hand, think it's going to be more towards the 6 weeks. Even if he needs surgery, he's going to be out for at least a month, I think. Because not only do you have to rehab for a couple of weeks, he's probably not going to take a lot of swings, but then you also got to get your timing back. And I don't think it's going to take, 2 weeks to do all of that. So hopefully surgery is not what he needs. That's what Wander Franco had last year, and that's what kept him out for 8 weeks. And really, after week six, it was just about pain tolerance. But it's a big blow to the Angels lineup, who Trout was getting hot, and so were the Angels. They're in the third wild card spot right now. They're in third place in their division, I believe, by 6.5 games. I haven't looked at it today, but I believe it was 6.5 games after this weekend. So this is a big blow to an Angels team that not only lost Trout now, but is going to lose Ohtani at least after the All-Star break as far as pitching. Not hitting. We're going to see how that happens, but he says he'd like to at least DH. And now this is an Angels team that, has to start thinking, what is it going to do with the trade deadline a month from now?
Yeah, it really is a shame, because the Angels were playing, they were playing okay ball, right? And the whole hamate bone is just, it's a freak injury. We saw it with Wander, we saw it with Andrew Benintendi. It's just a super freak thing. So not only you lose one of the better center fielders in the game, but, now your best pitcher and probably the best player in the game is out with one of his abilities that he can't do, and Shohei. So it's like, I think now it's time for the Angels to get realistic here with less than a month to go before the trade deadline. I mean, I think they're going to have to sell. It didn't look like that was the case maybe a month ago, but now And now it's becoming a little bit more evident that it's like, okay, no Trout. It'll probably be 6 weeks. They're going to be out of a playoff race because, you know, you look at that division, right? Texas, Houston, you know, and Texas is at first. So it's like, how are you going to compete? Even with the expanded playoffs, you look at the East and the wild card, you know, three teams are going from the East, right? So I think you got to sell. And now it's fun for us because we get to talk about, you know, who the possible suitors are, what kind of packages will be put together. But yeah, losing Trout, I mean, you look at Trout's career over the last few years, he's gotten less and less healthy. Now, again, this one a freak incident. So now you look at Trout's prime. I mean, it's almost over. Trout's prime is almost over, as sad as that is to say. He's been in the league now since 2011. You know, this is year, what's the math on that? 12, 13, and one playoff series, no wins. Otani's gone. I mean, you've wasted this man's prime. It's just such a shame for baseball. And, you know, we talked about it in the previous episodes about how we don't get to see these West Coast guys. Well, with no Otani and the Angels keep stinking, you know, we may never see Trout in the limelight again in terms of us East Coast people.
Yeah, and I know you said they might have to sell, but – and I know this is – I know the 2021 Braves were a better team. They had a lot more pieces around them. They had Freddie Freeman. They had Austin Riley, Dansby Swanson, guys like that. But do you think that they might just try to take a page out of that 2021 Braves team who tried – or who got, you know, Escobar, Duvall, Soler? They kind of added at the deadline, even though I think they were only, what, six games above 500 at one point, or maybe even at 500, and they end up buying at the deadline. They – I mean, we didn't really know what kind of pieces Soler and Duvall and Escobar were going to be for them, but they ended up winning the World Series that year against a really good Houston team. So do you think we could see something like that? Because I know we want to jump right in and say, oh, now you got to trade Otani. But one, the team that's trading for Otani is only going to get him for 2 months. And we could talk about a little bit later because I have a strong opinion on that as well. But that, and if they're playing good baseball in the next month, because Reed Detmers is doing really good for them. He's starting to turn around his season as far as, you know, the starting role. You got, I know Neto is injured, but Velasquez has stepped up a little bit. Moustakas has kind of performed a little bit since coming over from Colorado. I know Rendon just went down as well with an injury, but this is a team that's playing good enough baseball, I guess you can say, to be, you know, above 500 and to have that third wild card spot. Do you think it'd be something that we could see where, you know, they try to still hold on to Otani, you get Trout back in a month, and you kind of just add a couple of pieces? Maybe you try to see what Kansas City's selling. You try to see what Colorado's selling. Maybe you go after a Kyle Freeland. I know he's not having the greatest of years, but that's another arm that you can add to your pitching staff. Maybe you go after, you know, somebody on Oakland's roster, maybe a Tony Kemp, that can kind of just play all the positions for you and get on base in front of Otani and in front of Moustakas and, you know, guys like that. And Rendon, depending on how long he's going to come out, he walked off on crutches after yesterday's game. But I think there's a couple of pieces that you can add to this team, like they did with Escobar and Moustakas already, that can kind of be similar to that 2021 team where they can at least make it to the playoffs. I'm not going to say they're going to win the World Series if they add a Tony Kemp and a Kyle Freeland, but they can at least make it to the playoffs and show Otani that, hey, we're, even though we lost Trout, we still want to make it to the playoffs. We still want to show you that we can contend, you know, with you in our lineup.
Well, I think the moves that they've made show that they care about winning. I think it's all going to come down on what happens in the next 3 weeks here, because it's still, again, a little less than a month away from the deadline. Nothing's set in stone yet, you know, but I think your argument about, you know, 2 months to trade Otani, there's going to be a team that's dumb enough to put together a package to get him for 2 months and try and convince him to sign. So, I mean, if the Angels are downright bad, let's say over these next 20 games, let's say they go, I don't know, 6-14, right? You say, okay, you have to entertain it, because you got to look at the clubs that are going to go after him. they're going to be brainwashed into the fact that they think they have the money to sign him anyways in the offseason. And their 2 months of having him is going to be their pitch. So you can't just let Ohtani walk for nothing if the team is that bad. Now, obviously we're not saying they should trade him because it's still early. I like the Escobar move. I like the Moustakas move. Good depth. Some guys injured. You know, it's all going to come down to these next 3 weeks. I think the Angels roster this year has a little bit more jazz in it than it's had over the last few years. It's not like, you know, every year over the last few years, it's like, okay, the Angels, we know they're going to finish in fourth place. They're going to stink, right? This year, a little different. Now, Texas is really good this year. But, you know, I mean, the Angels offense, we know, can turn at the right time. You got Detmers on the mound, Sandoval as well. It's like, this team isn't bad. Like, they've never been downright bad. They just never had pieces. Now they've got some pieces, and we'll see what happens over the next few weeks. But you can't just rule out trading Ohtani because the team's going to be dumb enough to put together a package.
And this is the only thing with, in my opinion, because I was listening to it on ESPN Radio, MLB Network Radio, and stuff like that. That, in my opinion, they were trying to make scenarios about how maybe the Rangers could trade for him because they have a loaded farm system, or maybe like the Braves and stuff like that. The Braves make sense in a standpoint that even if they don't sign him, they have enough pieces in the major league organization, the major league level, to still contend for years to come. But if you have a team like Texas, I know it's never going to happen with Tampa Bay, but you know, teams like Tampa Bay, if you have, you know, other teams other than the Mets, Yankees, and Dodgers, if you trade for Ohtani, you have to win the World Series, in my opinion. That's the only way that the fan base will, like the Baltimore Orioles just called up their number two prospect in Cowser this year, this week. If, say, you put a package together, hypothetical, this isn't going to happen, obviously, but you put together Grayson Rodriguez, Colton Cowser, Jackson Holliday, Westberg, and maybe somebody at the major league level. Who else can you put in there? Maybe I don't want to say Austin Hayes. Maybe a Mountcastle, right? Pieces that you know are going to be there for the Angels. Now, I'm not saying the Angels shouldn't take that because that's a great haul. You're getting two top prospects from the Orioles, the number one prospect in baseball. But if I'm the Baltimore Orioles, I now then have to win the World Series to make that justified as a fan. If I was a Baltimore Oriole fan, great, we gave up, you know, whatever for Ohtani, let's go win the World Series now. Because if we don't, then it's, we just gave away the farm system to bring him in for 2 months. We're not going to sign him back. And we just did all that and we lost in the AL wildcard game or the ALDS, whatever, you know? So to me, if I'm a team, I know you say they're teams that are going to be dumb enough. Maybe the Mets try to pull some type of package together. I don't know what they have at their farm system because, like, Brett Beatty, Francisco Alvarez, and everybody is – Mark Vientos are at the major league level. Maybe those are three guys that you package them around. But if I'm, like, the Rangers or if I'm the Orioles or an insert team that doesn't have the signing capital, the payroll to sign them, it's like we gave away the farm system and we didn't do anything with them. We got them for 2 months and we lost in the wild card game, or we lost in the – in the division series. We didn't win the World Series, which is what would have to happen in my mind to justify, you know, trading for this guy who's gonna garner a Juan Soto type package.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you 100%. But again, I mean, these teams are trading for him because they believe that they can win the World Series. Like, here's the thing. If the Mets were good right now, if they were in first place or maybe in a first wild card spot, and they traded for Ohtani, it would make sense. But the Mets have been really bad, and nobody knows if they're going to make the playoffs. So if you trade Ohtani to the Mets, and the Mets are like, okay, you know, let's you know, rejuice the roster only to get the second or third wild card spot, it doesn't make any sense. I mean, the only true teams that would put together a trade package for Ohtani right now, I think, in my opinion, are teams that you and I could both agree on could win the World Series if the season ended today. And who are those teams? I mean, the Braves aren't going to do it because the Braves are strategically one of the better teams in when it comes to operating baseball. We both know the Rays aren't going to do it. You know, Baltimore doesn't have the money, and, you know, they have a bunch of historically terrible signings and trades. They're not going to do it. The Yankees for sure are not going to do it. So, you know, who?
I don't think the Yankees have the farm system. Who as an Angels, you know, front office member, like, you have to start with Volpe and then Jason Dominguez.
I think you start with Dominguez. Actually, and the answer is no.
Exactly. And for both sides, because yeah. I don't think as the Yankees you're going to give away Dominguez, and I don't think Dominguez is a strong enough piece to be the center point for an Ohtani trade.
Right.
Really, who is? Because you have to have – now, granted, Mackenzie Gore and C.J. Abrams were good prospects at the time. They just haven't panned out right now. You know, Abrams is fielding is all over the place, but – that was their centerpieces, the Padres' centerpieces for Juan Soto. And it was really, I don't know why the Nationals gave him up for with 2 years of control left, but that's another story for another day. But, you know, who is going to be a big enough prospect centerpiece that teams like the Yankees can give up? Because if I'm the Angels and the Mets come calling, the first person I'm starting with is Francisco Alvarez. And as soon as the Mets say no, it's like, well, okay, sorry. No thanks.
Yeah, I don't see – yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, look at the other rosters too. Like, are the Padres really going to give up their number one prospect, Jackson Merrill? No, I just don't think – the Diamondbacks are a perfect example. They're going to be a team that makes the playoffs this year, rooted with young talent that they've brought up through the system. Are they really going to give away any of those guys for Ohtani? No. Absolutely not. Plus, everyone's forgetting the point. You still have to pay some of his salary this year. So it's like, you know, I don't think anyone's willing to do it. So, I mean, you're right. You justified it 100%, and I'm glad you did, because I had a totally different opinion coming in on this, that someone was going to be stupid enough to do it. Someone would be stupid to do this. Like, give away your whole system and lose the wild card game. It makes sense.
That's exactly my point. Like, if I'm the Mets, why would I give up if I know for a fact I'm going to gear up $500 million, $600 million, whatever it is, to sign Ohtani? Why would I not just let it play out, keep, you know, Beatty, keep Vientos, keep Alvarez, and then just add Ohtani to that lineup? If I think he's going to be the missing piece, why would I not strategically sell some pieces at the deadline to create some more space, create more money, sell away a Mark Canna, a Starling Marte, guys like that? You already got rid of Escobar. I don't know how much he was on the books. I don't have the number right in front of me.
It was like $10 million.
So you already got rid of $10 million. I think Starling Marte is about the same.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to give up Verlander or Scherzer because you think they're going to bounce back either in the second half of the season, or you think they're going to have a better start of the season next year. You know, so why not keep those young prospects or young talent that's coming up in your major league system and then just try to sign Ohtani? The same thing with the Dodgers. The Dodgers have an amazing young farm system and some really good young players that they could probably trade for Ohtani. But the only people that are really going to be on your books next year, and I looked at it yesterday, I know Mookie Betts is making $30 million. I don't remember who the other player. Oh, Freddie Freeman is making $30 million as well. But other than that, you're gonna take off $20 million when Kershaw is off the books this year. Probably not gonna sign him back, and if you do, it's probably gonna be within what, 10 to 15 million,
if that.
Luis Urias is the only other player that could possibly make over $100 million as far as their contract goes, because he's a free agent. Other than that, you got James Ottman, you got Bobby Miller, you got Dustin May, who just went on the IL with a flexor strain. So you got young talent that is not going to make a whole lot of money. You can still try to sign Ohtani for, you know, $500-600 million, whatever it's going to be.
And also, you look at the big market teams like the Yankees, Mets, and Dodgers. Why give up the farm system to go win this year when you know it's literally going to be a 3 or 4 team race to just sign them in the offseason? I mean, Steve Cohen is going to get into a bidding war with Hal Steinbrenner, and I don't know the owner of the Dodgers, so we'll just point at Andrew Friedman. They're going to go into a bidding war, so why give up your players to go get them now and try and convince them that trading, you know, winning this year is the right thing to do. Because the Mets, guess what? The Mets could stink this year, and the Mets fans could be disappointed, and Frank the Tank could go on his rants, and they could all just yada, 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 whatever, right? But guess what? They're all going to be booking all their season tickets next year when Steve Cohen throws $500 million at them. Same thing with the Yankees. Same thing with the Dodgers. I mean, heck, the Dodgers are probably more likely to get him anyways because it lives right there. So, you know, for the big market teams, it doesn't make any sense. And you look at the small market teams, like the only small market team, I don't even know if I can count Atlanta as a small market team, that would be in the mix for Ohtani aren't going to win a World Series this year, unless you count the Rays. And we know the Rays aren't going to do it.
Yeah, and the other thing too, the other point, because I was talking to my dad about this yesterday, is like, if I'm going to trade for Ohtani, I have to talk to his agent and say, listen, this is what we're planning to offer Ohtani as soon as we trade for him. Will he sign for it? And if the agent says, I don't know, I pull the trade proposal because I'm not giving up, you know, like we keep saying, I'm not giving up my young talent for a guy that I'm going to have for 2 months and then not be able to sign. So it has to, like, because the Texas Rangers came up for some reason, I think, on MLB Network Radio. So that was the only thing that's the one team I was thinking about because they gave up Cole Reagans and another minor league prospect for Aroldis Chapman. So they're definitely buying. They're trying to bolster that bullpen. But, you know, if I'm the Rangers and I'm Chris Young, the GM, I'm going to Ohtani's agent and saying, listen, we're planning on offering you 10 years, $500 million. If I offer you this contract, are you signing it? If the agent of Ohtani doesn't say anything other than yes, absolutely, the day after I trade for you, I'm not doing it. I just can't. I can't be the guy that gives away Owen White, Jace Young, you know, Jonah Heim, guys like that for Ohtani, and then only have him for 2 months. And now the Angels have all my best prospects, and I have to face them in a division for 14 games a year. And I can't be like, oh, sorry, Angels, I want them back. You know, we didn't get to sign Ohtani. Can we just, you know, make another trade? It's like, no, that's not going to happen. So anything shy of, yes, absolutely, we're going to sign the contract the day after, you know, he gets traded to insert team here, then I can't do it. I just let it play out. The same thing with Juan Soto. He's going to be a free agent after this year as well. It's like, why would I trade for Juan Soto, all of my young prospects, because the Padres are going to want the same. And I'm not saying the Padres are selling. They're absolutely not going to be selling. They're going to try to turn this season around just like the Mets are. But why would I give away the kind of haul they gave away to Washington for 2 months of Soto just for him to turn around and sign with the Yankees for, you know, X number of years for X number of dollars? It doesn't make sense. And we used to see this all the time. Like the Yankees did it with Aroldis Chapman and the Cubs sent over Gleyber Torres and who else did they send over? There was a big package for Aroldis Chapman in 2016. And I mean, they won the World Series. That's what you have to do though. You have to trade your number one prospect and you have to win the World Series if you're going to do that type of trade. Because you can't do what the Cubs did the next year to get Jose Quintana, where they gave up Jorge Soler, they gave up Nick Madrigal, they gave up Yoan Moncada, Yoan Moncada got traded to the White Sox in the Chris Sale trade. But they gave up three or four top prospects for Jose Quintana, and then lost in the NLDS. It's like to me, I can't do it. As a GM that's got a promising future, I can't give away that future for 2 months of Ohtani and losing in the AL wildcard series.
Yeah, you got a good point. You changed my mind on this whole thing because I came on here. I'm like, okay, like what are the packages? Like what are we putting together? And now it's like, shoot, like it doesn't make sense for anybody to make a trade for Ohtani right now. So, I mean, it's amazing because of how much he has transcended baseball to the fact that no team is going to trade for him because – he's going to demand such a high salary. Like if this was just a guy who's going to make $20 or $25 million, people would be all over him. But this dude's going to make $50 million a year. That's why you can't
give him two salaries.
Yeah.
You got to give him 25 as a Yeah, you got to give him 20, at least 25 as a pitcher and at least 25 as a hitter.
Yeah, that's going to be a big salary.
Let me ask you this question, because I kind of came up with this contract scenario last year. And maybe this makes more sense for a team that could possibly do it.
I remember this conversation.
If he wants $50 million and he just turned 29 years old today, happy birthday, Shohei. Why as an agent or as Shohei Ohtani, why not think about a four-year, $200 million contract? You're going to make $50 million for the duration of the contract. You're only going to be with the team. Say he goes to L.A. and he puts up really good numbers. He'll be 33 years old. Now, some may say that at 33 years old, you're out of your prime and you're not going to get that next big contract. So that's when you would do the 10 years. But let's see, 29, 30, 31, 30. You're going to be 32 after the end of that contract. Albert Pujols signed a 10-year deal at his age 32 season. So did Alex Rodriguez. So did Miguel Cabrera. So it has happened before. And Ohtani, I think, is a good enough talent to where he would get it again. But why not think about a four-year, $200 million contract? Not only, A, can it take some of the pressure off, or maybe I think it would take some of the pressure off of a team that signs him to be able to go out and sign other pieces around him. And B, say he goes to New York and he just is absolutely miserable in New York. Instead of having to be there for 6 or 7 more years, he's out of there in 4 years and he can try to get his next big contract. And then he can do another four-year, $200 million deal, kind of like what the NBA does, where they just have their 4 to 5 years, $250 million, and then you can just move on if you want to.
So I agree with you, but from a different perspective. I look at it more from an organizational perspective. You're really going to unload 10 years and $500 million at somebody? What if he gets hurt? What if he doesn't perform? I mean, that's all the things that come with bad signings and all the negatives of bad signings right now, especially at that price. Like, it's one thing if you give a guy a $200 million contract and he doesn't perform. He goes down as a bust. Great. But $500 million. I mean, you run the risk at signing this guy to that long of a term of either being, you know, the greatest GM in history or the worst GM of all time. Right there with one signing, one game, injury. So, and I look at it from an organizational perspective. I mean, you're going to invest $500 million in a guy, and relatively speaking, we know he's a good baseball player, but you're going to invest $500 million over a 10-year period to essentially hope that he's the same player as he is right now. Right? It just doesn't make sense for – I've said this for years. It doesn't make sense for an organization to go more than 4 years with this guy. It doesn't make any sense. And it would benefit Ohtani also because, again – at 32, which is the very end of his prime, when he'll still garner that deal because he'll still be, you know, in that prime year, he'll get the same amount of money somewhere else if he needs a change of scenery. So it just doesn't make sense for both sides, too. I look at it more from an organizational perspective to the point where you can't make a high investment like that over an 8 to 10 year period. You just can't. That's too risky.
And if you do that, you get more people in play.
Yeah.
You get the team, you get the Houston Astros, the Texas Rangers, the, you know, San Diego Padres, if they even have that much money. I know they have like, you know, $3 billion worth of contracts already going. But say they don't sign Juan Soto this offseason, and instead of giving Soto the kind of contract he wants, they give Ohtani. You know, I know they're two different players. Soto plays the outfield and, you know, but whatever. But you get a lot more teams in play. And also, I don't think he's going to be what Albert Pujols and Miguel Cabrera have been at the end of their contracts, because both of them, you know, other than Albert Pujols' last year where he hit the 20 home runs and he got over 700, you know.
That wasn't even on that 10-year deal.
Yeah. And he was bad for the Angels. He was.
Yeah, he was.
That was a bad signing. The Josh Hamilton signing with the Angels is bad. So has the Rendon signing.
CJ Wilson also is another one that hasn't worked. CJ Wilson.
I mean, we can go on and on about some of these signings that the Angels have had. You know, the last couple of years, the Noah Syndergaard signing didn't help out even though that was only a 1 year, $20 million deal. It's like you spent $20 million on Noah Syndergaard when you could have possibly used it for, you know, two guys that could have helped bolster the lineup anyway. But, you know, why not think about, you know, like the basketball contracts, 4 years, $200 million. Then in year two, if it's just going terribly for both teams, it's still a tradable contract. Because you can put a team on the books for maybe you can retain half of that. So a team's now only paying $50 million for 2 years, you know, 25 and 25. The Angels will take away the other $50 million for those 2 years. And it's a tradable contract that you can get out from under. If, you know, Shohei is just either terrible by the time he turns 31, which I doubt he will be, because I think he's still either going to be a good bat or a good pitcher at some point or another, or the team is just doing, like he goes to the Texas Rangers, who is still on my mind for some reason. But he goes to the Texas Rangers, and all of a sudden, in 2 years, they're losing 100 games back-to-back years. You can get out from under that contract. You can't with a 10-year, $500 million contract, because nobody's going to want to use the rest of you can't say cap space in MLB, but you know they don't want to use the rest of their payroll to try to pay that player for the next 10 years.
Or yeah, I mean, spot on right there. Just a bad investment. I mean, my take's a little bit more boring than your take because I'm looking at it just from the whole business side of it, from an organization. But, I mean, you're right. There's room to pivot because of term. You got a guy like look at Chris Davis at the end of his career. Baltimore, right? Signed that one deal, and he never had a good year on that deal. It was an unmovable contract because of the term. I look at some other sports too, like, and we'll just stick with baseball. Jacoby Ellsbury. If you're telling me that if the Yankees signed Jacoby Ellsbury to a term of 5 years or less, that the Yankees weren't going to be able to move that contract, someone would take it. Look at Pablo Sandoval, the Red Sox. That contract was a 4 year deal, 5 year deal. I think it was a 5 year deal. They were able to move it, right? You can't run the risk of the term being too long because of the whole what if.
Yeah, because I mean, and I keep going back to the basketball contracts, but that's exactly what you're seeing. You're seeing a lot of these teams, or in basketball, nobody signs more than a 5 year deal, and after year two or three, if either the player's just not good anymore or the team isn't in the position that it needs to be, it's an expiring contract that teams are more willing to trade for. If it's only if you only have 2 years left on your deal, that's a lot more palatable than 6 years left on your deal.
Right.
So I think, you know, I think if – now, don't get me wrong. If Shohei signs a 10-year, $500 million deal, good for him. Like, he deserves it as far as how he's been playing these last 3 years. But it might be in both sides' best interest to maybe think about a 3-year 150, 4-year 200 million, 4-year 250 million. You know, now I know people don't probably want to give up, you know, 250 million for only 4 years, you know, because right now we're seeing 10 years for over 300 million, but I would think it'd be in the realm of possibilities to be a better situation for both sides than a 10-year 500 million.
Yeah, you have to get realistic, right? 10 years and 500, we've never seen a $500 million contract. It's just not realistic. Have we seen a $400 million contract? I don't think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, one, yeah. Two.
Trout
and
was Har- no Harper's was no 330.
Harper was 330.
I Let's think just, Trout's the only 400.
Trout might be the only one at 400.
And that was, but 12 that was over years, 42.
Yeah, yeah, over a 12-year period. So it's like, and look at Mike Trout right now, hurt again, and his prime is over. As much as it sucks to say it, but I mean, hurt again. His prime is either over or a year away from being over, in my opinion. The Angels have wasted his prime. I don't know why he signed that deal. He could be playing for the Phillies right now and being close to winning a World Series, which is really just a shame. But, you know,
I wanted him to be a Philly so bad in 2019.
It just would have been great. Would have been great for baseball. But you know what?
Think about that free agent class that you would have had in 2019. Bryce Harper, Mike Trout, Manny Machado.
Was there another one in there in 2019? I feel like there was.
I'm sure there was, but that would have been the big three.
Josh Donaldson at the time was a free agent as well. MVP. Yeah.
So, I mean, just the anyway, I don't know. It just, I didn't want him to stay an Angel. Glad he got paid, but oh man, what if? What if Bryce Harper and Mike Trout were playing on the Angels last year in the World Series?
The both Phillies. Guys
that
yeah.
Both guys that, you know, Harper's knock was he didn't get to the World Series, and he left the Nationals in the year after they won the World Series. We finally got to see him in that stage, and he performed. He was the NLCS MVP. He had a really good World Series, or really good playoffs, I should say. And then you see Mike Trout in the World Series as well. You get six games of him being on one of only two teams playing.
We'll never see it. We'll never see it. I legitimately think that we will never see Mike Trout in the World Series.
Unless they trade Ohtani for like a big haul, like a Nationals type of haul, and then sign him back, because Ohtani's like, hey, you know, trade me away this summer, and then I'm going to sign back with you because I love playing in Anaheim so much. I don't think it's going to happen. I think we're going to see Trout win a World Series is if after this 12-year deal, he just signs a one-year contract to join, like, you know, the Atlanta Braves or
sure.
whatnot.
I agree.
You know, I think that'd be the only way. And it's sad to see, because before Ohtani, Trout was our generational insert great player here. He was our Ken Griffey Jr.
Yeah.
You know, our Andrew Jones, our, you know, Willie Mays, Mickey Mantle. He was doing things that no other player was doing since, you know, those guys were around. And it's just sad to see, because you had all those MVP years, those three MVP years, the one rookie of the year, season that he almost won the MVP too, if it wasn't for Miguel Cabrera winning the Triple Crown. But it's just the and it's not for lack of trying, because like we said, CJ Wilson, Josh Hamilton, Albert Pujols, you know, the rookie year of Trout. But it's just, I mean, you can't waste a guy like this. Because at least with Ken Griffey Jr., he never made it to the World Series, but he was in the playoffs.
Yeah, yeah. It's just, it's pretty sad. I mean, he's going to toil away. He's going to be one of those players that toils away and never even sniffs the World Series. Like, I mean, I'm trying to think of a comparison of a guy in the Hall of Fame. It's like, I just don't think there is. Like, in any sport.
I don't remember his name off the top of my head, but there's somebody in the – I think it's Al Kaline.
Uh-huh.
Has five games that he played in the postseason during his career with the Tigers, and he's in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
So Trout would then overtake him as the only player in the Hall of Fame with less playoff games than Al Kaline.
Yeah.
And back then in the 80s, there was no ALDS, ALCS, and World Series. It was you played in the ALCS and then you played the World Series. So his only five games were to try to win the pennant and then go on to the World Series.
Technically,
so he would overtake
yeah.
him. Yeah. Because right now he's got three games and they got swept. And I think he had one hit. I think he was 1-for-12 in that series. And they got swept by the Royals.
It's almost like it never even happened. It's like a fantasy. It's like, oh yeah, you know, Mike Trout did play in the playoffs. It's like, okay, yeah, cool. When? I mean, we know when. 2014, obviously, yeah. They got swept by the Royals. But like, it just seems like a fantasy because that was 9 years ago now.
It's just, it's sad.
It is. It really is.
So, but from, I guess, one. Ooh, I just got this notification on my phone. We were going to talk about the All-Star Breaker. I was going to try to I guess, segue into the All-Star teams, but I just got a notification from ESPN that Jimmy Cordero of the Yankees is suspended for the rest of the season.
Yep, saw that right
under
before
MLB's
we came on.
Domestic violence policy. 25 minutes ago this happened. So I know you wanted to talk about Aaron Hicks a little bit because Baltimore was in New York, but Let's hear that rant and let's hear this rant about Jimmy Cordero.
So let's do Cordero first. I mean, the Yankees, it's like they have a history now of just having guys who God, I don't even want to say it because I really shouldn't be saying it, but they just have a history of guys who go out there and they're just beating up their wives. I mean, look at Chapman. Look at Domingo Herman, right? Like,
but we didn't even mention through a perfect game.
Yeah, through that's a perfect game.
That's how much we, like, that's how much we just don't care about the guy.
Yeah, I mean, it's a shame. I mean, think about it. He, domestic violence, cheated. Not drugs, but, you know, sticky stuff, allegedly, whatever. Don't get me started on that. Then through a perfect game, not only does nobody care because Domingo Herman is just ultimately not a good dude, but, I mean, it was against the Oakland A's, too. But that's a conversation for another day. I just don't understand how the Yankees just, like, keep this stuff behind closed doors and, like, don't bring in people that are good for the culture. Like, you and I keep talking about it with the Rays, right? The Rays are successful because, like, the culture that they have is just insane in the clubhouse and even in the front office. It's like, okay, like, these people bring in good people, right? I think organizations really need to prioritize bringing in good people, especially, you know, unless they're Ohtani or unless they're Judge, right? Can we bring in a good dude every now and then? I mean, Jesus. But I can't really go in that far because, to be honest, I haven't really watched much Yankees this year. And to be honest, I didn't even know who Jimmy Cordero is until a few days ago when I realized he was supposed to start soon. So that's that. Speaking of sad, which we were getting into, Aaron Hicks comes back to New York this week. They're finishing up a series today. And, you know, he spends 8 years with the Yankees, had some really good moments, had some really good games where, you know, 2020, I don't think the Yankees win the wild card if it wasn't for Aaron Hicks. And he gets booed by the fans in his video tribute and, you know, every time he comes up to the plate and he hits a home run and he gets booed. Now, here's the thing. Was Aaron Hicks bad over the last year and a half? Yes, there's no denying it. You saw it. I saw it. The whole world saw it. There was not a bigger bum on the Yankees, besides Donaldson, than Aaron Hicks, right? But you can't boo the guy like that for a guy who was on the team for 8 years, had some really good moments. I mean, 2019, ALCS, home run against Verlander. 2019, extra inning game against the Twins, the diving catch, and then the game-winning hit in the same game. 2020 wild card, 2017 postseason, 2018 season where he somehow pulled out 20 homers. You know, you can't boo a guy who was there for 8 years, had some good moments with the franchise, played on some really good teams, and this is the better thing. Everyone likes to go to the contract. Aaron Hicks only made $10 million a year. That's pocket change for Hal Steinbrenner and the rest of baseball. So, Yankee fans, get a grip. Because, you know, as much as we hated on him over the last year and a half, this dude had some really good moments with the team where in 2019 it seemed like nobody was doing anything except for LeMahieu and Hicks in that series. Hicks goes out and hits a couple homers. It's like, he's been healthy. You know, Judge's been hurt over the last few years. Stanton's been hurt over the last few years. Donaldson's been hurt over the last few years. Hicks has been healthy. He's given it his all. It's like, I like comparing it to the Mets. Matt Harvey, at the end of his Mets tenure, was awful. Awful human being, awful player. Got booed off the field in his final days as a Met, well-deservedly so, because he was a terrible human being, failed to show up to work, right? He comes back a few years later. They give him a standing ovation. Why? Because for, a, you know, 2 years, he captivated New York City and, you know, the whole Dark Knight persona and that game of the World Series against the Royals. Like, you can't boo a guy who's given you so much. I mean, 8 years is a long time with a team, you know, nowadays. So I didn't like the fact that the Yankee fans booed him. I thought that was really excessive, especially because Hicksy, he put it out on social media that, you know, no matter what the reaction that he got, he was super thankful for his time in New York, and he and his family loved it in New York. And it's just, I just didn't like it. I didn't like that they booed him.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised at all that he got booed. You know, that's New York. They did that to Gallo. They got him out of there. They've been doing it to Donaldson every now and then. And it's just, you know, if you're not performing well in New York, you're going to get booed. So I'm not surprised. It was really cool to see him, though, hit a home run.
That was
after
great.
He got booed. And it's just, that's exactly what you do. You just, because he's been performing extremely well for Baltimore. I think he's been in a little bit of a slump lately, but since they've gotten him from New York, he has been one of the reasons that Baltimore is not only number two in the AL East, leading the wild card, or I believe they're leading the wild card as far as the standings, and then, you know, has the second or the third best record in the league. So kudos to him, because it's, I mean, Gallo said it too last year. It's extremely hard to perform when somebody's booing you. And although as a fan, you have a right to boo if somebody's in a 1-for-50 slump and he's doing terrible and you got to pay him $10 million to hit 067, but good for him.
Yeah, you know, look, the Gallo situation was a little different because, you know, they brought him in. He had huge expectations. He was only here for a year, and it was bad. I mean, he had the worst one-year stretch in Yankees franchise history. They have the right to boo Gallo? Absolutely. Is it the right thing to do after the guy's not on the team? No, absolutely not. It's just, Hicks was there for 8 years. It just didn't make sense to me. And also, I'll just touch on the Baltimore numbers for a second. 264 right now is an Oriole, his batting average is. 5 homers, 13 ribbies in 28 games. He's got 87 at-bats. He's producing. He's got his overall season average now up to 231. He's got a lot more power. So, you know, some of these guys just need to change the scenery after a while. And you know, personally, as a Yankee fan, you know, I want him to succeed wherever it is. I wish it wasn't for the Orioles, but, you know, it's, you know, good for him. The dude had some great moments for the team. And this is, again, Yankee fans just being way too extreme. Because last year, you know, when the team was going in a funk, right, they had a horrible second half. All they did was boo him. Does that help a team? When all you do is come to your home ballpark and just boo? No, absolutely not. So, you know, it's just another case of Yankees fans being idiots. So, there you go.
And, you know, I was just thinking about this, too, because he just got DFA'd and you said change of scenery. But could you possibly see, like, a Nelson Cruz who just got DFA'd yesterday by the San Diego Padres being signed with the Yankees, especially because Judge now doesn't know if he needs surgery, doesn't know how long it's going to be till he comes back. He's already been out a month. Is that somebody that maybe the Yankees try to plug and play? Is it somebody maybe the Mets try to plug and play and put him into that lineup maybe to hopefully do something like what Gary Sanchez has done for the Padres, where he just mashes home runs and has that little like short spurt of just, you know, hitting 15 home or not 15 home runs, but maybe like hitting another, you know, 8 to 10 home runs the rest of the season and just giving you some good ABs?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I don't even think he's been that bad for the Padres this year. I mean, the homer numbers are a little down, yeah. But, I mean, he's hitting .245, which is better, just best batting average if the season were to end today in a couple years. I don't know. I mean, teams could use him against left-handed pitching. Like the Mets, I think he'd be a great fit for the Mets. You know, we saw him with the Rays, good clubhouse guy, right? You know, is good with especially the players, the international players, especially the young guys. Like, you know, he can work with Alvarez, he can work with, you know, whoever these prospects are that are international. I don't know. The Mets are a bunch of misfits right now. But anywhere he goes, he goes anywhere and he just fits like a glove. Like, he was great in the Padres room, just wasn't producing, and he got DFA'd. I don't even think he's having that bad of a year, really. So, yeah, I'm interested to see where he goes because there's also a lot of teams that are familiar with him, like a Baltimore, like a Seattle, you know, Minnesota even. You know, I mean, that might be a little too soon. But, yeah, you know, all's possible. I think he goes to a contender for sure. Like, he's not going back to the Nationals where they just sit him in last place.
No, and actually, you saying the Mariners makes a lot of sense because – that's a team that could possibly use a nice veteran bat. They have Yenio Suarez. They have Teoscar Hernandez. But guys like Julio Rodriguez, who are on the All-Star team, but, you know, kind of scuffling a little bit down the stretch, maybe take some of that pressure off of him and maybe batting Nelson Cruz behind Julio, maybe in front of Teoscar. You know, that's a good team, I think, that could use a veteran presence. Because, I mean, they're starting to get – they just got a complete game shutout yesterday by Logan Gilbert. So this is a team that their pitching staff is starting to come along. George Kirby's doing really well for them. He just got named to the All-Star team to replace Shane McClanahan. Luis Castillo's on the All-Star team, and he's been performing great for them so far to begin this season. Robbie Ray's not, you know, is still on the injured list. And they're coming. Is he coming back? When did he get injured last year? Because I know he's having Tommy John. He got injured in the second half of the season, right? So he's not coming back.
Yeah,
he's not coming back this season, I don't think.
Yeah, he didn't undergo the surgery actually until what is this? Yeah, they said he won't be back till the middle of 2024.
Okay, so then yeah, so it was the end of last year that he got the surgery, but it's a nice veteran presence to put in that locker room with guys like Cal Raleigh, guys like JP Crawford. You know, just to have them around and kind of show them, because yes, they made the postseason last year, but this is a Nelson Cruz that has been to the World Series twice, has been to the playoffs countless times, has been part of countless postseason teams, including, you know, the Rays last year. No, 2 years ago in 2021. So this is a guy that knows how to win and could be a really good fit for that Seattle Mariners team.
He's been one of the better Mariners over the last 10 years. I mean, his career as a Mariner, he was a three-time All-Star over the 4 years he was there, hit 163 homers, and hit .284. Now, he's not that Nelson Cruz because in those years he was age 34 to 37, but he can provide some pop, and the Mariners fans love the guy. So, you know.
And you're missing his greatest stat of all during his Mariners times.
Oh, what was this?
He has a All-Star selfie with Joe West.
That's right. Yes.
Possibly, you know, I actually mentioned in 2017.
I mentioned Joe West on a broadcast the other day. One of the umpires got drilled in the chest by a pitch, and I'm like, oh, he could have done a Joe West. But yeah, no, you're right. I think he'd be a great fit.
Yeah, and so let's go a little bit to the All-Star team as we start to wind down this episode. And I don't know if you've taken a look at the roster. I'm sure you have, but who is there anybody that's like really eye popping that, oh wow, like they made it, they had that good of a first half, or like you're really surprised that, you know, maybe they didn't have a good last couple of years and they kind of just turned it around this year? Anybody kind of pique your interest?
So yeah, a couple guys I would say. First of all, I think it's impressive that three-quarters of the infield is Texas Rangers, right? But I think Jonah Heim, I think, is a good one because I remember last year, you know, watching Texas and being like, okay, like, you know, he was only hitting sixth in the lineup and, you know, they got Seager and Semien and all these other guys. And he was just kind of plugging away down there in the sixth hole. And you're looking at him, I'm like, man, this dude, like, can swing it from the left side. He's got some pop. And I remember thinking to myself, I think this kid could be a good player in the league for years to come, and here he is as an All-Star. So, you know, really cool to see that. Did I see that? Did I see this right? That JD Martinez is an All-Star? Yeah. I mean, I didn't know he had a good first half. I mean, resurrected, you know, having a little resurgence with the Dodgers. So I think that's a good one. I mean, the dude could not hit the ball out of the ballpark last year with the Red Sox. He just simply couldn't. You know, he's 35 years old. He's got 19 homers and 56 ribbies. So, I mean, heck, he looks like 2018 JD right now. It's cool to see. So I'd say those two. I think it's – we'll just call it the Texas Rangers, Jonah Heim specifically, and then JD Martinez in the NL. I'm pleasantly surprised to see that he's having a good year at age 35.
For me, it's really the only person is Orlando Arcia. You've seen the type of year that he's having, manning that position, you know, taking over basically for Dansby Swanson, who left in free agency to the Cubs, but kind of guy that was kind of milling around in Milwaukee. And then once they traded for Willy Adames in 2021, kind of didn't have a position anymore, goes to the Atlanta Braves in a trade in 2021, wins the World Series with them. You know, so this is a guy that I'm like, you know, you knew there was something that Milwaukee liked because they tried to get him playing time and they tried to make they tried to make him their everyday shortstop or even moving him to second base. And then Keston Hira came up. Now he's no longer with the Brewers, but you know, Keston Hira came up, so that kind of tried to move Arcia over to short and third. So it's just really good to see him having the type of year that he's having in the middle of that Atlanta offense, who, you know, just like the Texas Rangers, has, I counted, there are 12 current or former Atlanta Braves in the All-Star game this year. Because you got Freddie Freeman, Jorge Soler, who else was it? Freddie Freeman, Jorge Dansby. Soler, Dansby Swanson, and Kenley Jansen. So you think about the tentacles that Atlanta has, and the guys that Atlanta has going to the world, they're going to the All-Star game, are going to be there for a long time. Matt Olson, Ozzy Albies, Austin Riley, Orlando Arcia, Ronald Acuna Jr., Sean Murphy. All of these guys are locked up, so we're going to see a lot of Atlanta Braves. I mean, there are eight of them in this All-Star team. So we're going to see the Atlanta Braves for a long time. And then another guy that was pretty special too is Corbin Carroll. Because you just heard about the potential that he had, but now we're starting to see it at a high level. We knew the speed was there, and now we're starting to see it. But the opposite field power for me is something that I'm kind of just like taken aback by. Because yesterday against Max Scherzer, he just goes oppo taco like it's nothing. And he's done it a couple of times. I believe he did it in the Rays series as well. Where he's just the opposite field power has been something that's kind of just like, wow, I didn't realize he had that.
Yeah, impressive player for sure. I mean, he leads the D-backs to the season that they're having. I mean, there's one player that's obvious. We don't want to say it because of our Rays bias, but Yandy. I think it's great that he's in it. Obviously, we saw him last year. I mean, he's just a doubles machine. I mean, I was listening to Andy and Neil the other day, and Neil brought up a really good point. Or somebody did. I don't even know if it was Neil. I don't remember. But where are you getting a leadoff guy that plays first base, has the extra base hitting him, like Yandy Diaz? Where in the league is there? Do teams have that? I really can't really name a leadoff hitter that is quite like Yandy Diaz.
The only person I can think of was, you know, back in, you know, 2017 to 2019 when Trout would sometimes lead off for the Angels.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe George Springer is a leadoff hitter, center fielder that can hit you, you know, a leadoff home run every now and then. He's got some power, but a type of guy like Yandy that's not only going to hit for average, but that also just get on base too. As a first baseman, that's not something that you always see. It's like something that you never really see.
Yeah, you don't.
When was the last time we saw a first baseman with like a, you know, like a 400 on base percentage? Because I believe they said yesterday he was top five in the AL in on base percentage, maybe top five in the league in on base percentage. It's like, when the last time you saw that?
Yeah, I mean, first baseman are stereotypical 30 homers, 100 RBIs, and 165 strikeouts. You know, we don't really see first baseman hitting leadoff. So yeah, it's something new. And Yandy's a hell of a hitter. I mean, we've seen this for years now. So, you know, I remember last year, you know, there was who made it from the who was the second baseman on the Blue Jays last year that made Espinal made it, and everyone was like, over Yandy, really? But no, now this year he gets the nod, so that's good.
Yeah, and then also just to kind of and the All-Star roster surprises Josiah Gray too, because he was a main piece in that Scherzer and Trey Turner deal to the Dodgers. So it's good to see him actually turn around, and I think he's going to be a good piece to that Washington Nationals rotation. That's, you know, most likely going to move on from Patrick Corbin, who can't seem to win a game anymore, and Steven Strasburg, who most likely will never pitch again in the major league. So, you know, at least you got Josiah Gray now as your ace. Him and Mackenzie Gore can go back and forth.
Yeah, it'll be a good All-Star game. You see the jerseys, by the way? I actually really like them this year.
I like them, but I still like wearing the actual jerseys more.
Yeah.
These are great jerseys, and I liked last year's jerseys more than I liked 2021's jerseys, where it was either white or gray, but you had how the actual look of the jersey was. Like the Shane McClanahan's was all white with gold Rays, but it was the same style as the Rays home uniforms, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I like these jerseys, but I'd still rather them wear their actual team jerseys.
Oh, I agree.
Because 100%. I think it just looks good.
Yeah.
And if you're gonna go to these Nike uniforms that are trying to make them, you know, one dimensional, at least have the hat be the same that they wear during the season. Or like a different style hat, like where I think in 2019 there was like a star next to it or something.
Yeah.
No, so you can tweak it a little bit, but I just like wearing your regular jerseys more.
Yeah, we talked about it last podcast. I agree with you 100% on that. There's no reason why they shouldn't be wearing it. Because it's cool. Like, you get the classic Cubs white, and then you get, you know, the Yankee road grays. You know, I just like that. You know, you get to see all the different uniforms from around the league.
Yeah. And then especially because I was on TikTok, and somebody had the 2006 All-Star game. Mm-hmm. And it was when Colorado, Pittsburgh, and Cincinnati had the vest jerseys.
Yeah.
And they were sick. I think Nike needs to come out with another vest jersey.
Speaking of vests, not to get a little off topic, but did you see Luke Voigt down with the Syracuse Mets?
Yeah.
Wearing a cutoff and hitting a homer. I mean, that is the most Luke Voigt thing that I've ever seen. I thought it was great.
That was like when Dietrich for the Reds, remember they had the vest and he went no sleeves and he was doing some bicep curls, and then he hits a home run into the Allegheny.
Yep.
No, that's
Pittsburgh.
What is Cincinnati's?
That's a good. What's the
river?
Is it the Ohio River?
It might.
Hang on, let's get our geography here. One second. We need this.
Either way, it was cool. And then he obviously hits one, you know, 420 yesterday, playing for Syracuse.
Which is a shame, by the way. The dude was hitting, you know, he led the league in homers in 2020, and now he's in AAA. Yes, it is the Ohio River.
But I mean, that's another guy that the Mets could probably just come up and take, you know, I guess take some at bats.
DH him and, you know, let Alonzo. I mean, first of all, Alonzo's defense at first base is dreadful, but Luke Voigt's defense, from what I recall, but in his time with the Yankees, was not much better. So,
but who knows? It's gonna be interesting because now we're getting into the All-Star break. I know you're gonna be on the All-Star, and your season's All-Star break too. But it's gonna be interesting because we're in July 5th. We got 3 weeks till the trade deadline. It's going to be interesting to see what moves people make, if Ohtani moves, which, like we talked about, I don't think is going to happen, but, you know, it's going to be fun. This is other than the actual game itself, this is the time of year that's fun to me, because it's always like, oh, here's the trade packages that could happen for such and such. This is who I think should pick up, you know, whoever. So it's going to be really fun.
Yeah. I mean, this is a perfect time to get back into it too, because, you know, college just ended. So it's like, okay, we're headed down the stretch after the trade deadline, which is soon, and the biggest star in the game could possibly be up for grabs. So I like it.
Yeah, definitely going to have my phone on Ohtani watch.
Speaking of phone, but real quick before we keep going, have you played Immaculate Grid?
I have.
I mean, what a time killer that thing is.
It's so funny too, because for some reason, I can never – like, today was the Mets and Cubs. Mm-hmm. And it took me 20 minutes to remember that Javi Baez. Because for some reason, my brain doesn't want to go to the obvious answers. It wants to go to the weird ones. Yeah. Like, I'm thinking, like, what was – hold on. I'll just look. Have you done it today?
Yeah, I did. Did you do it today?
I did.
So I did Juan Uribe for Cleveland and the Mets, and it was 0.3%. So my lowest percentage for a player was 0.03%. It was Yankees and Brewers. The legend himself, Chris Dickerson. Who?
Yeah.
I don't know.
So Perfect example. Mets and Guardians, then Indians. Who did you put?
I put Juan Uribe at 0.3%.
Oh, see, I put Asdrubal Cabrera.
Yeah, that's a good one.
And then immediately I was like, because I like to see who the top name was, like Francisco Lindor. Mm-hmm. It's like, why did I not think of that? Like, I'm such an idiot. Like,
well, no, I think it's a good thing because you like getting the whole point of it is like getting the low rarity score.
Yeah, it's just like Trey Mancini was the Cubs and Baltimore.
Cubs in Baltimore. I think I put Pedro Strop in that category, and he was like 3%.
I put Sammy Sosa for his like 20 games that he played in Baltimore at the end of his year.
Yeah, that's right.
Or like Andrew Miller for Cleveland and Baltimore.
Yeah.
Who did you put for the Cubs and Mariners?
Milton Bradley at 15%.
Really? I put Brandon Morrow. I had 0.8%.
Wow. On that. That's a pull and a half right there.
Yeah.
Wow. All right.
So I was just like, I know Brandon Morrow pitched for the Mariners, and I was just hoping that I was like, he played for the Cubs. Like, I'm just going to put him down. And then I clicked, and I was like, oh, my God, thank God.
It's fun.
And then I looked. I think he had like 10 starts for one of the teams. I don't remember if it was for Seattle or for Chicago.
Yeah, I think it's great. It's become part of the morning routine. It's like, you know, some people get up and they scroll through social media or like, you know, go make breakfast or whatever. I just get up and play Immaculate Grid and start my day. It's great.
So what I was so mad the other day. I got 8 of 9, but I should have gotten 9 of 9 because the one was, I think it was the Yankees and the Cubs. So I was going to put a Rolas Chapman and I start typing in CHAP and it comes up, but I clicked on Matt Chapman's name by accident because that was the first one that came up. I was like, son of a, I was like, oh, well, I technically can't get it. So, but anyways. Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. That and do you still play pickle?
I do. I haven't done it today, but I've been on a bit of a roll lately. I think I've gotten like 15 out of the last 16. I just got back into it a few weeks ago. So I gotta play it.
I'm gonna let you know. Today was weird.
Okay.
Today was really weird. Just because of the clues that I first got, and I was like, I was just thinking to myself, I was like, this, like, I don't know who it is. And then finally it kind of like dawned on me after a couple of guesses and I got the team right. And I was like, let me just put this guy.
Yeah. It took me 8 guesses to get yesterday. So, you know, we'll see.
It took me, I think my best so far since I started playing again was 2. It was when Freddie Freeman.
I had 3 the other day.
Because like I got, I don't remember what clues I got, but it's something just told me like, oh, this is Freddie Freeman. And it was the second guess I got, and I was like, oh, okay, bet.
There you go. So,
but I think that's going to do it for this episode because we can now just start talking about Pickle and MLB Grid. But I think that's going to conclude this episode of Young Lads, and we'll be on All-Star Watch and some Trade Watch for the rest of the week until next Monday when we have – you know, maybe we'll talk a little bit about the Futures game and who's played. And, you know, we got some good, you know, Marcelo Meyer and Jacob Lauer, I think is his name, the shortstop from the Diamondbacks.
Yep.
2 shortstops that I want to watch in this year's game. I know Junior Caminario for the Rays is going to be in it, so that's going to be interesting to watch. But we'll have a lot more hopefully we'll be a little bit more on Ohtani watch as far as what happens, whether he's going to pitch anymore for the rest of this week and into next week, what he's going to do in the All-Star game, how the blister and the cracked fingernail is going to be. But I think that's going to do it for this episode of Young Lads.
Yeah, this was a good one. We'll be back with you because, you know, hey, All-Star break all around. We'll have a quick turnaround, and we'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, and like I told Harris, I'm going to actually be coaching some baseball games this week, so I'll let the audience know how that went. But for Harris Eisenberg, and for Peter DeFee, this has been Young Lads Episode 10, and we will talk to you again next Monday.